Blog Talk Radio.
It's almost time.
You right there with the pretzel. Time to sit down.
Who's, man?
Yeah.
Hey, you going to the concession stand. You going to the bathroom. Come back. The show's about to start.
Got my boys. We out here ready. We about to be some high-flying, high-slamming, slammer-jammer, three-point shooting between the legs, behind your back, through your legs, on your neck. Hey, everybody, if you guys will get in your seats, I'm going to sing the national anthem.
Ready.
It's time to... I put it down the babies, put down the pepperoni.
Let's go!
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, game time!
Hey, good evening to everyone out there. Welcome to another Parents Cause of Parents Network here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, M.H. Scott, and as always, I have to say it, I'm going to promise you another wonderful show. Normally, this time we're preparing for our guest to come on, but due to circumstances and a few other things, and fully understanding and truly appreciate the guests, our guests that would normally be on with us, Mr. Alexis Avery from Jackson State, compliance officer at Jackson State. We're going to move forward, and she will be rejoining us next month on schedule to make sure that we get the information out to our children and make sure that they have a better understanding, and we as parents also get a better understanding of what the requirements are and how we can best serve our children and all of those great and wonderful things that we should be doing as parents of prospective student-athletes. And I use that word student-athlete very lightly, folks, because I like to refer to our kids as our kids. I like to refer to our kids as our children, not just student-athletes. I have a little problem with that because when you start referring to them as student-athletes, folks have a tendency to forget that they are children. They are children. They are children that have hopes, dreams, wishes, desires, and not just a part of a commodity for some huge industry that's out there making hundreds of millions of dollars, and in some cases billions of dollars, from the hard work that these folks are doing, that our children are doing. But on that note, I will pull up my man, Mr. Keith Wright, and see if Keith can share his little piece with us, the piece that he has done for the Parents Coach of Parents Network. And as soon as I have opportunity to sit down and talk to him again, I'm going to see if he will be willing to update this little piece for us, or do a revision or a remix or however we want to look at it to this little piece, to bring us up to speed on, some of the things that we have done in Parents with the Parents Network. He's a very talented young man, very gifted young man. I like to brag on him and let everybody know that he is a Harvard grad. So on that note, Keith is out there doing what he do, making it happen, and he's making it happen with the best of us. So on that note, let me pull up my little piece here and share this with you. I call it the College Experience, and it's done by no one other than our man, Keith Wright, graduate again of the University of Harvard. So we can actually say that he is a fellow alumni with our president, Mr. Barack Obama. Keith, where you at?
Thank you. at the game. Had people trying to talk about me, but that ain't no thing. See, I know what would mix it with the knowledge in my brain. And if I succeed, which has to be ball, would do the same. I can't complain the situation that I'm in. Each and this connector turned out to be my friend. I know when to turn up written, my career come to an end. And when the ball starts jumping, I'm about to pull my out the pen. But I'm making sense. Playing ball is just a small part. With this education, I have a great start. And if you work hard for the teachers, they might be showing love for the fans and the bleachers. I'm only preaching. I'm just trying to spit knowledge and the knowledge opportunity that is supposed to work. You get the knowledge. I get the ball as a tool. Now every day I'm living and I'm making strong moves. That's how I do.
Keith says it each and every time for us. He's making smart cool. He's making smart cool. And we love to hear that every time that brother decides to share them valuable words with us. He's making smart cool. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. Well, folks, saying that we don't have a guest in with us this evening, really and truly didn't have a whole lot on the script for us. I was hoping that our guest was going to bring something to the table, but as always, you know, folks have things that come up, and I truly appreciate the young lady taking the time to do what she do. I'm going to play something that cohort of mine on the Bachelor Pad did a show some time ago. Brother by the name of Tony McLean. And Tony and I, if I'm not mistaken, we go way back, and I'm talking about to the high school days. He did a piece where he had a nice little candid interview with no other than Mr. Everett Glenn. Let's see if we can get this piece up for you.
But we continue to press forward. I want to bring in our first guest of the evening, and it's had a chance to talk with this young man for quite a bit the other day. And it's good to have him on the phone, good to have this discussion with him. He is the humble president of the National Sports Authority and attorney himself. He is Everett Glenn. And Mr. Glenn, we appreciate you coming on. You have L.A. Bachelor alongside Tony McLean on the line, sir.
Thank you for having me on. Can I be heard?
Absolutely.
Okay, good. Okay, I don't know if I needed to unmute or whatever, but yeah, just glad to be here. I'm glad that you guys would take time to have the conversation.
Before we get into some of the discussion that we had off air, talk about the organization, what it represents, and how it began.
Well, it began years ago. I have, in another life, represented professional athletes as an attorney. Started out in 1982 with Willie Gault and continued with Jerry Rice and Richard Dent and Reggie White and Clark Kellogg and Gil Bird. And over the years, what became clearer and clearer to me was that representing individual players permitted us to only touch the individual that we represented. And so those that we didn't represent, and I'm proud to say that none of the guys that we represented is in the 80% club that if you saw T.J. Holmes' show last night on BET, or if you saw 30-30 on ESPN, we don't have any members of that group. But again, even though we had great success in helping these guys become men and leverage their talent for long-term success, these college campuses, we don't get everybody that we don't represent, and so you see all these other kids that go through the system. And so we were trying to figure out a way where we could utilize the access that we have gained over the years, where we could utilize the network and the information and the resources to represent a bigger cause. And as you indicated earlier, I mean, in New York, you got the Port Authority, you got the Airport Authority, there's the Oil Authority called OPEC. And in our community, though our children form the raw material and the labor for a $500 billion per year industry, there is no authority on sports in our community, and therefore we are subject to the whims and the will of the people that run the industry. I mean, even starting out in high school, I've represented high school athletes who want to transfer to different schools, and they're totally ignorant about the governing rules at the high school level that regulate their behavior. They don't know that, and then they play AAU basketball, and they don't understand that there's a rule about following your coach, and if your coach has got a relationship with the AAU basketball coach, there's all kind of traps out there for our children and their families simply because of ignorance of the rules. And, the same thing is true at the college level. And so what we thought we would do is, again, become the authority, become the resource for the community. Because right now we know that what's happening is they're taking our children. 70% of them are being appropriated every year to stock this AAU collegiate and professional system. And the only people that make money are the owners, the agents, the managers, the networks, the sponsors, the colleges, the universities. And then when you look at the end of the day, 80% of these guys wind up broke, and then 50% of the ones who don't go to college don't get a degree. If you look further, you find out that most of these big schools, while they have, on the football team, 60-70% of the players are black. On the basketball team, it could be as high as 100%. The black male population at the school oftentimes is less than 1%. If you dig a little bit further, you'll find out just right here in my backyard in Los Angeles, where there are enough black businesses that we have two black chamber of commerce organizations. Notwithstanding that fact, UCLA and USC, which again graduate in USC's case, 38% of the black players that helped them make $100 million, they would spend $750 million on Galen Center and the John McKay Center, and renovating Pauley Pavilion and renovating the Rose Bowl, and nobody black earned a dollar. Even though, again, we have enough black businesses in Los Angeles that we have two black chamber of commerce. So there's a lot of black architects, there's a lot of black engineers, there are black contractors, there's black electricians, there's black facility managers, there's black construction managers. And there's a whole lot of black folk who didn't play football that graduated and alumni of these schools, but notwithstanding that fact, we're locked out. So I heard the conversation a minute ago, and we mad about what happened to our sister, and I would join in that. But I'm more mad about this, because this represents $500 billion. And we know what needs to be done. What we need is just to have the will to do it.
You know, I've been reading your information, and we talked about it, and some of the statistics you threw out there are just mind-boggling and astounding. 70%, as you mentioned, of the black community appropriated, and this is across the board, professional, amateur, collegiate. You mentioned high school, $500 billion a year. The 67% of the NFL players are black. 78% of the NBA players are black. 70% of them go broke. 50% of the black athletes who have helped turn college pro into big business and represent 90% of the stars fail to graduate. I bring all this up, and we can go on and on and on. And we can get into the coaches level to the HBCUs. Where did it begin for you, in your opinion, where we have, we've always been, as Tony said, the most emulated, the most copied, if you will, and people always wanting to be like Mike, yet the money doesn't trickle down. Where did it, this exploitation, we've seen it in films, the black exploitation film, where did it happen in the athletic community, in your opinion?
Well, I mean, I think that just like I would refer to a gentleman by the name of Tom Burrell, who led Burrell Communications for years and is in the Advertising Hall of Fame. He wrote a book, Brainwashed, and so it began probably a few hundred years ago. It's just manifested itself as sports has gone from a $1 million a year business to a multi-billion-dollar a year business. I mean, I think it's always been with us. I mean, black folk are at the top of every list of bad things and at the bottom of every list of good things, and this is just another example. So, I mean, it started before I got involved, for sure. So I couldn't pinpoint it. I think some key dates would be the integration of Alabama and Mississippi and Georgia and LSU and Florida and Texas and Tennessee. Before that time, these players were going to HBCUs because that's the only place they could go. And I think had that continued, then they wouldn't feel so incompetent to do anything but play sports, right? Because they would have been exposed to doctors and lawyers and engineers. I mean, if you know the history of HBCUs, despite fewer resources, they've produced more scientists and doctors and lawyers and engineers than these white colleges combined. Half of the teachers who are black come from HBCUs. So I think once they took our children, or we gave them our children, actually, because this is not an indictment of white folk. This is an indictment of black folk. Okay. Because we gave them and we continue to give them our children. And once they took them out of these HBCUs where they could see successful black men, where they could have black lawyers and doctors and engineers and bankers, where they could get exposed to them, then I would think, and just using my own life as an example, everything I've accomplished professionally is because of a role model that a black person set for me. Okay, so if you put them in an institution like a USC, like an Ohio State, like Alabama, like Texas, where there's no other black folk around, then I think it's hard for these guys to fight, you know, because again, if you assume that we're all brainwashed at one level, fortunately, I had my Willie Lynch chip extracted. Okay, but these kids, it's hard for them to fight that. And if you put them in a situation where the coach is white, the athletic director is white, all the athletic department is white, all the professors are white, all of the agents and managers are white, and it's hard for them. I know personally when I would go, my first name was Clark Kellogg, and I'll never forget. I mean, this kid was, you know, the next coming of Michael Magic Johnson, actually, and IMG and ProServe and David Falk. All these guys were after Clark, and I never had even met Clark. I'm from Cleveland. He's from Cleveland. And, you know, fortunately, he was raised by his mom and dad, and they knew who they were. And he, despite his amazing athletic talent, relied on his parents. He knew he didn't know what his mom and dad would know on wisdom alone. And so even though these guys were, you know, all over him, and, you know, they could say they represented Magic and Michael and all those guys, I had never represented a player, right? And but I did. I brought a contract with me that I had done for Wells Fargo that was for about $850 million. It was the size of a telephone book. And then I bought his NBA player contract, which is four pages on a printed form with just a blank that you put in for the salary. And I just put both of them on the table. And I said, Clark, now, if you're a bright guy, that's what they tell me. Now, if you think I can do this contract right here for $750 million, and on the other side of the table was one of the largest law firms in the whole world, and we negotiated every word in this document, if you don't think I can figure out what number to put in this blank, then you're not as smart as they tell me you are. But again, fortunately, he had parents who did know who they were and, you know, were confident in you know, they didn't believe that the only way he was going to go to the league was that he hired a white man. They didn't believe that. But so I think it started way a long time ago, and it really went south once they took our boys out of the HBCUs and in the name of integration, but really it just became a situation where their desire to make money was greater than their hatred of us. And so they just brought them in, and the rest is history.
Yeah, some folks think integration was the worst thing for black people. Let me ask you this, since you yourself talked about mentors and the people, your role models that were black. We talk about how the kids were given over, yet we had these role models, especially at these HBCUs, all these professionals, the doctors, the scientists, and professors. Then what's the thing for me is if we had those, how much of this was the proverbial self-hatred, you know, where we are ashamed to be black. Even, as you mentioned, the parents now that graduated HBCUs steer their kids to the predominantly white, so go to the SEC, that's where you'll be seen, that's where you'll get your chance. And also speak to how the mentality of the athlete is, or not athlete, but the black young black males and females, but especially males, that feel like the only way to have success is to be that small percentage of athletes that make it at the next level.
That's a good question, and I think part of the problem is we black professionals who are doctors, lawyers, you know, IT professionals, engineers, you know, teachers, firemen, police, or whatever you want to put on these kids the pressure to do business with black folk when we ourselves don't do business with black folk. Okay, so
amen to
it's
that.
A little bit hypocritical that we tell this guy he needs to have a black lawyer when you don't have a black lawyer. He needs to have
right.
a black agent. And you don't have a black insurance agent. You can buy State Farm from anybody and still have State Farm, but we still got to go through a white guy. So, again, I think it's I don't think graduates from HBCUs are not necessarily the ones who are producing these players in the first place. And so that's part of the answer is that, you know, even though you could go to an HBCU, but I don't think that the products of HBCUs necessarily the ones who are producing these athletes, and then to the extent that they are, again, it's just the function of, you said it, I mean, we anything that benefits black people. We don't support the NAACP. We don't support the Urban League. And I know we can talk about the merits and the effectiveness of those organizations today, but when they first started, we wouldn't have the rights and the freedoms that we have without those organizations. Okay. But today, Wells Fargo and Bank of America and Toyota and you know, every other corporation in the country, they don't even have membership dues because black folk don't support their organization. They get all of their money from corporate America. And so in the case of Wells Fargo and Bank of America, probably 6 months ago, both of them were found guilty by the government of discriminating against black folk and paid fines of nearly $1 billion combined. And the NAACP and Urban League never said anything about it. The government stepped in and found them guilty. But so if you ask yourself, I mean, is a $100,000 check to support the annual fundraiser, the dinner, is that worth compromising what you came to be about in the first place? So, I mean, it's a complicated issue. Much of it does do with self-hate and, again, and which is perpetuated by the media that portrays all of these negative images, even last night. You know, I mean, all the show 30-30, you know, white folk made money producing a show about black failure.
Yep.
Okay, so they make money every day. Even on our failure, they make money. And but we could have a show that spoke about Dave Bing or Magic Johnson or Junior Bridge. All kind of brothers have done great things.
Wow.
Okay, and but they don't want to show that show. And we, again, we know what needs to be done, but we don't do it. The only time change has occurred in this country is when somebody has demanded it. You know, gay and lesbian folk have demanded their rights, just like we demanded our rights. And they're going to get them because they're not going away until you give them to them. So unless we demand that this system change, it's not going to change.
Mm. Let me ask you this, and we're talking with Everett Glenn, the president of the National Sports Authority on the pad. Before I kick it over to Tony for some questions, as part of the other piece in your article, you talked about the Big Ten, for instance, and how much more money they make by themselves as one conference, one major conference, than all the four HBCU conferences combined, way over the top. And you talk about two particular coaches who I think are sleazeballs anyway. That's my opinion. I'm saying that. Nick Saban and John Calipari, who care nothing about these kids, yet they make their base salaries are more than, if I'm not mistaken, I believe you said 90 coaches in HBCU. That's insane. So how does the HBCUs compete, if you will, not just from the economic standpoint, but what the economic means, exposure and maybe attractiveness for those athletes to come back home?
One of the reasons we formed the authority was to help better manage two of our most valuable resources in the black community, historically black colleges and universities and black athletic talent. Before we can get black athletic talent to go back home, we first got to educate the black community, and I think about some of the disparities that you just mentioned, where one team, including, if we just take Penn State, the team that, or the institution that paid a $60 million fine for screwing young kids, despite the fact that they paid the $60 million fine for screwing young kids, they still get $25 million per year from the Big Ten TV contract.
There you go.
And that $25 million, that their fine of $60 million is paid over 5 years, So that's 12,500 or 12,000 something. I don't know. I'm doing do the math, but it's less than 15,000. And so they take the check from just the TV revenue. This don't include the gate receipts and concessions and all this other kind of stuff. So it was a slap on the wrist. But if they could fine them $60 million for screwing some kids, actually screwing them, then they've been screwing our kids for years by bringing them onto these campuses and making them work like they work for the university, not like they're students. And I was just on a panel yesterday at the L.A. City Club with Dr. Mark Emmert, who is the executive director of the NCAA. Okay, and this man had the nerve to say it. I mean, he said it. I didn't say it. They have a rule that says you can only spend 20 hours.
The Sonoma diet recommends using a 7-inch to 9-inch plate, which is considered.
Sorry about the interruption, folks. I'm not sure exactly what happened there. We're going to find out what happened with our audio track and come back to the show here in a minute. Thanks for listening to Parents Go to Paris Network here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, M.H. Scott, and as always, it's wonderful, wonderful, wonderful that you can join us this evening. So, you've been listening to us, and that's a pre-recorded show with my friend and colleague and mentor, Mr. Everett Glenn, and a couple other great brothers from the Bachelor Pad. I will be right back in a moment.
Check out Parents Coaching Parents Network on blogtalkradio.com/parentscoachingparents.
Jim Boeheim, the Baby Gang Syracuse, is under investigation. He is such a cheater, just like with Bernie Fine.
You, of course, mean the Bernie Fine situation where the accusations turned out to be false.
Yes. But this CBS sports story is bad.
Do they have any specific allegations in the story?
Nope, but they see Syracuse is breaking every rule in the manual.
Who says?
A person who does not want to be identified.
Someone rock solid. How bad can it be? North Carolina invented a course for its basketball players to take and was not punished.
But has a sexual assault allegation that the university covered up.
If they covered it up, how do you know about it?
Because they avoided punishment because they were basketball players.
So the fact that a Graham Just and Syracuse's Judicial Review Board both said the players were innocent just screams cover up.
Syracuse is a dirty program.
Dirty enough to buy Anthony Davis. That is right, they had a commitment from Anthony Davis, then he chose Kentucky mysteriously. But Syracuse cheats.
You are bitter. Are you some conspiracy theorist?
Two stories break in two consecutive years 2 days before the NCAA tournament. I am sure that happens to everybody.
You are a hater.
Yes, I am a hater of crappy journalism.
Yes, that's just a little piece that we like to share with you. Talk about the NCAA violations.
Check out Parents Coaching Parents Network on blogtalkradio.com/parentscoachingparents.
And with the 43rd pick in the 2012 NBA draft, the Atlanta Hawks select Mike Scott from the University of Virginia.
Check out Parents Coaching Parents Network on blogtalkradio.com/parentscoachingparents.
Well, folks, we're going to rejoin the conversation with Mr. Everett Glenn and the brother from the Bachelor Pad. And hopefully that you're really and truly getting something out of this great conversation, that great piece of dialogue that they're sharing with us. So let's get back to the show.
Some of us won't because we're just so brainwashed. We just think that our kids are, you can talk to NFL people, you can talk to NBA people. They'll tell you that you don't have to go to these schools. And if you look at the NFL and NBA, they can get from all kinds of schools you ain't never heard of.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, and it's a myth. It's a myth. And it's perpetuated by the Ohio State and the USCs and the Notre Dames and the Texas and Alabama. They're training a myth, because if they told you the truth, then you wouldn't go to the school. And come on, man, they ain't telling you the truth about nothing. They're telling you you're going to get a degree. And then they don't give you time to take classes. And if you tell a coach, look, I got to take this class, and I'm going to be 15 minutes late one day a week. And he tells you, well, you got a decision to make, son, because you want to play for me, you got to be on time. I mean, so they lied to these kids all the way through. So why would you think they were telling the truth that you don't have to come to the school to go to the pros? Or if better yet, why don't they tell them that less than 1% of y'all going to the pros anyway?
And that's real. And I think part of what you just said a minute ago was compelling, the fact that, you know, so many of us love sports but don't want to get into real substance of the sports and all that goes into it, the exploitation of the athlete. We don't want to deal with it. We want to stay in our own world and our own mindsets, and it's uneasy. It's not politically correct. It's like talking about race. People don't want to talk about it. And so we stay in our box, and we care more about touchdowns and three-pointers, and we get this on the show all the time. People are like, well, you know, what's the score in a game? We're so much more than that, and that we need to be so much more than that in order for your organization and what you're trying to champion to come to fruition. So what do folks need to do to get involved, to get galvanized and energized with you guys, and how can they reach out to you?
Well, in the words of my good friend George Fraser of FraserNet, one of the probably the number one network for black professionals in the world, we got to write checks, okay? It's $49 to become a member of the authority, $49 a year. And there's all kind of information we're going to have available, just news and information for people who get kids who play. Because, again, we're not trying to produce pros. We're trying to produce kids that graduate and have degrees in areas that they can go on and become entrepreneurs and have otherwise professional careers. So you can – and then businesses, well, we have a different level of membership for businesses beyond the $49, because we will create opportunities in sports for business. There's some young brothers out of Atlanta who we helped – get in, become certified to sell Arizona Missions insurance to agents who represent NFL players. That's a huge opportunity for them. We want to create opportunities for black businesses in an industry that would not exist without our talent and our labor. And if you get, again, any kind of a vision, you would know the supplier diversity, which was our ticket 20 years ago, that's drying up, because now you get gays and lesbians and white women and Native Americans and Asian Americans and Asian Pacifics and veterans and all kinds of people at the table now as a minority. Just like, you know, it was a published report that said 60% of what black folks used to get in one spend, $11 billion, went to an Asian firm, $11 billion. So we got to be looking for new sources of opportunity, and we think sports is the only one that we are the product, and so there's no better place to look. They can reach out to us at www.thensa.org, www.thensa.org. And again, there's Martin Luther King once said that there's nothing more powerful than an idea whose time has come. And we believe that the National Sports Authority is such an idea. The time has come for us to stop giving away precious, precious resource. And, I mean, imagine it this way. We were talking about male-female relationships. Everybody down here would understand it, right? You know, you can't give up the cookie, you know. So we're giving up our kids and this resource, and they're making $500 billion off of it. It's got to end. And we're going to lead the fight, and we just want some soldiers. You know, we don't want no guys that are scared. you know, and we want some soldiers because we have to go work on our people. That's the problem. We're the problem. We're not. This is not an attack on the NCAA or these colleges. We're mad at black folks that we keep doing this and leaving all this low-hanging fruit and all this money and all these opportunities and then complain that, you know, the economy is the way it is. Well, ain't no recession in sports.
That's for sure. Yeah, right.
Okay.
Right.
Reach out to us at www.thensa.org. Tell your friends, spread the word all over the country, because we're coming. We're coming from Florida to Washington State and every place in between, and the truth is going to set our people free. Hello, football fans. I'm Mike Thomas, head coach of Pittsburgh Steelers. Come join me for the 6th annual Gridiron Legends tailgate, Friday, July 11th, 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. at the Hampton Roads Convention Center in Hampton. There'll be lots of food, fun, music, raffle giveaways, and games for everyone to enjoy. You'll also get a chance to meet some of Hampton Roads' past and present NFL greats. The proceeds of this event help support Hampton Roads' Youth Foundation Football Camp and Scholarship Program. For more information, visit hryf.org.
Well, folks, you've been listening to the Parents Coach of Parents Network here on Blog Talk Radio. Played a nice little pre-recorded show that was previously done by a few colleagues of mine from the Bachelor Pad, along with my mentor, Mr. Everett Glenn. As you notice, Everett can be a little outspoken from time to time, but I think if you understand and really and truly listen to the message, you'll fully understand and appreciate what he's trying to say and what he's trying to do in our community. Everett has lived a nice, prosperous life where he has enjoyed the fruits of his hard work and understand that in order to help, aid, assist, and guide others, he must understand what he's getting into. And he does that, and he shares his information, shares his knowledge, and shares his insight as often as possible. So we really and truly appreciate that part. If you want to join in on the conversation, or if you have some comments that you want to make before we prepare to wrap up here, you can always give us a call at 917-889-8095. 917-889-8095. We're going to open up the phone lines here for a few minutes and see whether or not we have anybody out there that want to share anything that they heard this evening and share their thoughts or their views or their comments on it. You know, we'd love to hear from you. You know, our conversation is always focused around what we can do to best help, aid, assist, and guide the parents of our young athletes, of our children that are out there involved in the sporting industry, this industry that's bringing in, you know, the number has grown from $300 billion a year to now well over $500 billion a year. You know, what's going on out there? Why is this industry prospering so much, and the majority of the young men that's the backbone of it are not receiving their just due? And we can talk about all day long that a lot of them have nice, healthy contracts, and a lot of them are out there doing, you know, some great things and all these other things, you know. But I want to just give you a quick, very quick, down and dirty snapshot of something, and I want you to remember this and share this with others in your community, others in your circle, and hopefully they'll understand as well. I recently read an article in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution on their blog page. And this article highlighted some things that very interesting. It talked about the sneaker industry. And it talked about a gentleman by the name of Phil Knight. If you ever get a chance, Google Phil Knight. Phil Knight is the founder and CEO of Nike. Nike is, of course, you know, the big sneaker company that all the kids flock around and think that they need to have a pair of Nikes. And in order to have these pair of Nikes, you know, they are living on top of the world just to get a pair of our brand new Nike shoes. But it highlights and talks about Nike and the industry itself and, you know, where it lies amongst all the other sneakers, sports apparel, and all this other kind of stuff. But the point I wanted to bring out is we look at the LeBrons, we look at the Kevin Durants, and we even touch on Michael Jordan. All great athletes played wonderful games. Kobe Bryant, don't let me leave him out. All played wonderful games, have wonderful games, have been around long enough. But I think where a lot of them young men have missed the mark, and a lot of that is due to a lack of education, is, let me give you an example here. Phil Knight is worth $13 billion annually. Is worth $13 billion annually. All right? His Nike company brings in, I'll put it like this. Phil is worth $13 billion. Nike brings in $27 billion annually. Nike's number one product, of course, is the sneaker. Nike is also the Jordan brand. The Jordan brand is also part of that Nike conglomerate. The Jordan brand, along with the rest of the Nike products, brings in that $27 billion a year. Billion with a B. Phil Knight is worth $13 billion. So help me understand. Why is it that Michael Jordan is only getting less than 1% from the product that has made Phil Knight one of the richest men here in America? Michael Jordan's annual from Nike is just a little bit over, a little bit around 70 to 80 million. Now, remember I just said a second ago, Nike brings in $27 billion a year. $27 billion. Doing some quick math, folks, 1% of $27 billion will be $2.7 billion. No, excuse me, I'm sorry. That's 10% of $27 billion will be $2.7 billion. 1%, $270 million. 1%, $270 million. And I just said Jordan receives somewhere in the ballpark of 70 to 80 million. 70 to 80 million annually from Nike, who draws in $27 billion a year. And no, the Durants and Kobe and LeBron has not reached that level yet. I know Durant just recently signed a contract with Nike. I think it was in the sum of $300 million over, I believe, a 10-year period or something like that. So let's quickly break that down. That's $30 million a year. Because the shoe that he was allowed to put his name on the side of, the KDs, or his initials on the side of, KDs have become a hot commodity item. Commodity item. But even still, with the annual fees that Jordan receives, Kevin Durant receives, LeBron receives, and if we want to add Kobe into that, again, that still does not equal up to 1% of what Nike brings in on an annual basis. That's why, as we listen to Everett's conversation, you know, he made very clear that, you know, it wasn't an indictment against black or white people. It was an indictment against black people. Folks, we must understand that the young men and young women, and let's keep the focus on our young men, that the young men in our community are valuable resources of our community. If these young men were ever able to return back to the prominent lives that they should all lead and live, all our communities would be so awesome. So awesome. I don't think the rest of America will be prepared for us. I do honestly do not think the rest of America would be prepared for us. And I'm talking about both our athletes and our non-athletic scholars. Because for every 10 athletes that we have out there, we have at least one or two scholars out there that have done some phenomenal things in the world, across the country, and, you know, across the globe as well. So we cannot forget them, cannot overlook them. But we must understand and must be able to share this with our young men and our young women. And I say our young men and our young women because some of them young ladies are having young men of their own at some point in time or connected to a young man that's in a situation. And they must understand, really and truly understand. I'm begging and pleading with you to help them get that understanding. These young men are valuable, valuable, awesome, unreplaceable commodity in our society and in our communities that cannot be replaced. And we need them to understand their greatness and quit selling themselves short. Folks, if you want to join in on the conversation, you can reach us at 917-889-8095. Love to hear from you this evening. I know you got some thoughts, some questions, some comments that you really and truly want to share with us. And, hey, I welcome all. I welcome all. You know, I'm thinking to a Saturday morning radio show that I do locally here. And I have this guy that calls in each and every week. And this brother is really excited. And he really has some things that he really and truly think he has to share with our listening audience each and every Saturday morning. And I think we have built a nice little rapport with each other because, you know, I've had to call him out on some things a few times. But as I think about that, brother, I think about how he calls in and shares his information with us, and we truly appreciate what he has to share. I say that to say this. He doesn't hesitate to call in. he doesn't hesitate to speak his voice, you know. So I appreciate him for that. I applaud him for that. And, hey, I look forward to following his, following him as he moves forward in every great endeavor that he puts his hand upon. Well, folks, I don't see anybody that's really trying to reach in. I know I have a number of callers here on the line with us. You can, if you're pressing option one and you're not getting through to us here, we are live. I would ask that you hang up and call right back in, and then try option one again to see if that gives me the prompt to let you know that you want to come in on the conversation. We always appreciate you each and every time you taking the time out of your busy Sunday evening schedule, whether or not you're here with us on the East Coast, or whether or not you're following, keeping up with us way out there on the West Coast. But, well, folks, as I prepare to wind down, I must share this. Oh, man. Whew. Great information with all of you this evening. I had the opportunity today to drop my youngest off at college. And, you know, he wasn't overwhelmed or bubbling with any excitement. So he takes it all in stride. He gets a feel for his environment, and then he moves on from there. Very sharp and very talented young man. And I see nothing but greatness coming out of him as he pursues his career in the world of sports management. And I have no problem with that, because if you think about one of the things that Everett just shared with us, that if you realistically look at it, there's never been a recession in sports ever that we could talk about. Well, folks, you've been listening to the Parents Coach, the Parents Network here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, M.H. Scott. As always, it's been fun. It's been real. It's been real fun. And I look forward to talking with you again next week, or having you call in and check out the show again next week. Actually, next week is the third Sunday of the month, and we will have no other than Mr. Everett Glenn live on the air with us. And I know it would be something that many of you want to chime in on that conversation, because he's going to bring some heat. He's going to bring some heat. Well, again, you can always find us on Facebook at Parents Coaching Parents Network. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at PCP Network, and here on Blog Talk Radio. So until next week, folks, hey, you have a great evening. Keith, take us out.
Student of the game, had people frontin' talk about me, but that ain't no thing. See, I know I would make it with the knowledge in my brain, and if I succeed with that, then B-Ball would do the same. I can't complain, the situation that I'm in, meeting different connects that turn out to be my friend. I know it'll turn out great when my 4 years come to an end, and when the ball starts bouncing on my diploma out the pen, but I'm hating then. Playing ball is just a small part. With this education, I have a great start. And if you work hard for the teachers, they might be showing love in the stands or in the bleachers. I'm only preaching. I'm just trying to spit knowledge and acknowledge opportunities at your disposal when you get to college. I use ball as a tool. Now every day I'm living and I'm making smart moves. That's how I do.